If you're feeling that whitewater, that's totally natural. That's totally normal. Every successful business has to go through it. To get through it, it's decentralized decision-making, more cross-collaboration or cross-functional teams, and you got to realign. You have to define your roles, not your people. Welcome to Marketing with Matt. If you're an entrepreneur or business owner looking to create more margin in your life and business, you're in the right place. For more after the show, be sure to check out profitmoreworkless.com. Sometimes marketing sucks.
Sometimes.
Welcome everybody. We're talking about the heavy side of marketing and a little bit of story time here. I'm just fresh off the plane back from Mexico. I was out there for the Commitment Summit, and they had Graham, our COO, and me speak about the dynamic between visionary, integrator, and yeah, just that dynamic and understand how that plays out for the team. But it's very closely related to the dynamic between marketing and sales and then fulfillment and delivery, right? It's two sides of the same coin. We've probably talked about this before of how you want to continue to like elevate your service delivery, how you want to constrain that supply to make it easy on the marketing side of it. But I want to talk through something that, as I was having more conversations with other business owners, other marketers, honestly, even, there was a common theme. And I realized it was something that we've lived through as well. I've identified, and this is a concept that is over decades old, but I don't think it gets shared a lot because you don't pay attention to it until you're in it. So let me give you the symptoms that you might realize right now. And so if you start to sell and you start to market and initially just trying to get traction, will someone buy my stuff? Does my offer even resonate? Whatever it is. Hopefully, if it goes well, you get some traction. Sales start to happen. And the next phase is just fun. Because those are the days where you're like, I doubled the business last month, because you're like, when you're small, it's very easy to kind of get those kind of leaps and bounds, especially in like just post traction sale happens. You've got your delivery good enough. You're probably close and connected to it. Maybe, you know, even depending on what the stage is, it's like, it's just fun. It comes easy. The recommendations are high and so you keep on selling more. It feels like this was such a good thing. I'm predictably solving problems here. I should do more of this. And so then what do? You double down on your marketing, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but you do that. Then after fun comes this unsettling space where quality starts to drop. You start to realize that you place people in roles because they were there. Not because you even thought about what role do I need. You kind of thought, what people do I have? And as quality starts to drop, you start to spend more to try and improve the quality. You have to spend more to acquire another customer because of possible negative word of mouth. And in this phase, this is where profits dry up. And so in the fun phase, where you're almost consistently outpacing your fulfillment. Imagine if you double your sales from last month, you're like, I had the cost from last month. So now I have, you know, crazy 50%. I mean, you could triple your sales. So you're like, I have 100% profit margin. You're deeply in the business. You're usually working in it because you're there, you're actively involved, but you like, feels like you got a high paying job. Things are going really well. The next phase where you start to bring on more help or more team or more systems. They're not fully systematized. It's a lot messier. And this is described in a book called, the book is Predictable Success. They call it Whitewater. This Whitewater is where things start to feel wobbly. Profit goes away. And in this phase is usually where the two sides start to emerge. Almost resentment, right? Marketing and sales resents fulfillment because if they could just predictably always do it well, then we could do more of it. Fulfillment starts to resent sales because if they could just sell less, then we could get our, you know, feet underneath ourselves to actually do this well. Or maybe they're overpromising things that we can't actually deliver on. Because we maybe talked about this before on a previous show, but businesses are designed, they're optimized for zero profits. Businesses designed and optimized, if left untethered, it will try to solve as many problems in depth or in width, right? I'm just going to solve more problems for more people, or I'm going to solve for the same people I've been solving on a deeper level. And so any sort of excess earnings just gets reinvested into do what the machine is designed to do, which is solve problems. And so left untethered, that's what happens. It all gets reinvested in there and there's zero profits to show for it. And you're left in this really unsettling place where both sides are at odds with each other. And this is that whitewater phase, which I was having conversations. People are hearing like, oh my gosh, this is what I'm in, which is not, hopefully it's comforting to know that no successful business gets to skip this. This is a necessary stage. This is a consequence of having something that's worthwhile, that actually does have, you know, market fit, and it does solve problems, and it is effectively marketed. And so congratulations. Now the hard work of transitioning from whitewater, as he calls it, into predictable success. And so the transition there, he outlines, it's a great book. I just recommend it. So I could not do it justice to summarize the entire book, but you know, that gets you pretty far. There's more stages beyond there, but I think for a lot of folks, if you're listening now, you're probably growing up either into that phase, and you're probably not like in the place where private equities come in and kind of like taking the, you know, you can go past predictable success and, you know, over operationalize a business into death. And so he kind of details all of that side of it as well. But one of the critical things is decentralized decision-making. If you want to create harmony between your sales, your marketing, and your fulfillment, one critical factor is decentralized decision-making. So what does this mean? It means anybody on the team, if they could just make a decision, they'd all be kind of like 90% close to anybody there. There's a common understanding of like how we make decisions, and a necessary pull to like have and model cross-functional teams is what he talks about. So in small ways, there needs to be more collaboration. So in the early days in traction and even somewhat into fun, because their team is so small, like collaboration happens kind of naturally as you scale out. And because you don't have all the systems and processes in place to like actually, it would just feel way too messy. You couldn't, you know, possibly manage 30 people or 50, whatever it is, probably beyond 10, it starts to feel like unmanageable. And so what happens is silos get formed and people start to like have their own pods that they live in, and it's just isolated. And so there's not a lot of cross-functional teams, and there's not a lot of decentralized decision making. It's very much so siloed decision making, and so that creates sort of obscurity, and that's what creates that resentment of like understanding marketing, sales versus the fulfillment and delivery side of the business. So the critical thing is decentralized decision making, which is helped through some effective processes, but largely through pushing back and rewarding cross-functional teams. You know, the best example that he brings up there is it's not like everything becomes cross-functional, but you have to relearn that that is the best way. The team has to relearn that is the best way to solve problems is cross-functionally. And so one gimme example that he has in the book is like, let's say redesigning a website. Like that's something where, hey, you could get input from multiple parties here. And the, you know, it's almost like a committee, not for the sake of, once again, over operationalizing it, but genuinely trying to get more people talking collaboratively and understanding the best form of going forward is in collaboration there. Tying it back to, you know, we're talking about the other side of this, and a reflection that I got coming back out of Mexico was the separation between I had some very stark conversations. And so one conversation in particular, this is a gentleman who has an agency, and he runs on profit first, which is not a new book or a new concept, but maybe it's new to folks that are listening, or it's like, maybe we just don't live in this. I'll tell you, like, honestly, we do not run on profit first, but it was so intriguing. I was like, I've known about this. I was like, why don't we run on a profit first? And let me give it to you. The premise is, you pay yourself first. It's how do you decide what your costs are? What's left after your profits? Like you pull your profits first, and that sets the constraint for your expenses. It's most similar to Dave Ramsey's cash envelope method in my mind. It literally says, I like literally you get like cash comes in and you divvy it up into the envelopes. And if you guys aren't familiar with Dave Ramsey's envelope, this is like a system for getting out of debt. And he has folks be like, hey, you get your paycheck. And then you say, here's your $100 for groceries. And you take that envelope to the store and you've got your $100 for groceries. And guess how much you don't spend on groceries? $101. Because you literally don't have $101. It's like most strict, like classic ways, is like you chop up the credit cards, all you have is cash in the envelope, and you find a way to survive. Like if that only affords you rice and beans that week, guess what? You survive on rice and beans. It guarantees you live within the boundaries that are set here. And, you know, he is, for his program, it's usually prioritizing paying off debt, which is actually, you can do that in a profit first scenario, like, cause you need to have profits to be able to pay off debt if that's the situation you're in. And so, so it's by design. You start off, if a client pays you $1,000, you have a decided percentage that is profits and it comes out before. And the interesting thing about this, as he was explaining it in his process of like living into it, is initially you start with 1%. It's like, that's it. And it's like, well, if you did business on $1,000, could you do business on $990? Like, yeah, you could. Like, you could probably still fulfill on that. But it's based behaviorally. This is a similar to, like I said, in my mind, it felt most similar to a Dave Ramsey approach to getting out of debt, because many folks in the financial space dog on Dave Ramsey because it's like, well, it's not, you know, he does like a snowball debt payment where you just attack your smallest payments and keep going. And other people would be like, well, mathematically, you should actually attack the one with the highest interest rate.
Right.
And Ramsey's like, this isn't a mathematical problem. This is a mindset problem. This is a behavior problem. And so I think for entrepreneurs and marketing and creating this crisis where you are no longer profitable, it's not a mathematical problem. It is a mindset problem. It is a behavior problem. And so it starts with that in mind. If you literally pull it away, like it's not in the bank account, somehow you find a way to survive and thrive and live within what is actually in the bank account, because that's what naturally happens. And so it's a super interesting concept. So, you know, talk to a couple of folks, actually we're running this profit first. And it was interesting the decisions they made, the way that they created and crafted their service, and also just how those small steps stabilized and prevented, or at least, yeah, in a way kind of prevented the trauma of whitewater, because that is the consequence. That's the traumatic consequence of whitewater, is your profits go to nada. Your profits disappear. And that's like in Profit First, the book, that's a lot of his stories. His entrepreneurs who are like, they've had the business, they haven't taken a paycheck for 2 years, and they're living off of debt or whatever else. And that's the main reason why businesses die, is because there's no profit. The business might have revenue and it might actually deliver a good service, but if it's not profitable, you know, no one's going to keep it around. And so this profit first. So that's, I guess, to loop this all together and kind of give you some reflections from my time down at the Commitment Summits. One, if you're in that season, if you're feeling that whitewater, that's totally natural. That's totally normal. Every successful business has to go through it. To get through it, it's decentralized decision-making, more cross-collaboration or cross-functional teams. And to be fair, he also says you gotta realign. You have to define your roles, not your people. So for the business, you have to actually decide what are the roles that I need, not the people that I have, and kind of be shrewd to like, what does the business actually need versus just what do we happen to have on, you know, in the roster. But I think another critical piece, which is actually not part of predictable success, but I think it's there and it's underlying, is I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued enough that I was like, I think I want to start trying to do this, because if you want, like, just imagine whatever the goal is going to be, a business with 50% profit margins, like just insane. Especially in a service-based business, like that's a pretty insane number. Or 80% profit margins, whatever like the crazy insane goal you have for your business is, I don't think you're going to get there accidentally. I've seen versions of accidental success. It's never like groundbreaking. It's honestly, in hindsight, you're like, oh, this is, it probably underperforms what was possible. And so if you want to maximize the potential, the impact and the income of your business to be able to like have stability as you're getting better at marketing, because that's part of this. It's the consequence of, oh, congrats, you're good at marketing. Now you get to have these headaches, which drive you to have zero profits. If you could insulate and protect yourself from it in this way, and then continue to challenge yourself, where you can literally just start pushing it one degree at a time and really craft something that has margin, I think it's worthwhile. And so those were some reflections, a little bit of a potpourri episode here, but hopefully some meaningful stuff. Because as I mentioned, I had these recurring conversations, and I definitely saw a theme bubbling up there. And I think also 2023, for a lot of industries, there's been a lot of movement, a lot of shift, and especially coming out of some things that boomed a lot in COVID, there was a little bit of like a pullback, or just a continuous shift in industries. And, you know, if you were in real estate, or if you're in mortgage, like 2023, 2024 has not been 2021 and 2022. And so all these things kind of play together, and that's, you know, be all factors contributing there, where it just feels a little bit tighter than maybe it did in some of the years post-COVID. Thanks for tuning in for this week's Marketing with Matt. Check out ProfitMoreWorkLess.com to learn how we create high margin marketing. Also, if you know someone who'd enjoy the podcast, feel free to make a recommendation. I'm sure they'll thank you for it. Okay, bye for now.